Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a look at the national election results and a breakdown of who voted and where they voted here in Wisconsin.
First, in a very tight race, Wisconsin has a new Democratic governor and its first African-American lieutenant governor. And they'll need to work with an even more heavily Republican legislature.
In an even tighter contest, Democrat Josh Call is claiming victory as Wisconsin's new attorney general, and U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin handily defeated State Senator Leah Vukmir, despite a lot of outside spending for both candidates.
WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson joins us after a very late night and early morning to talk about results. Sean, thanks so much for coming in.
Good afternoon.
Have you slept at all?
A little bit.
Here and there, right? Well, Governor Walker has conceded as of this afternoon. What did he have to say?
He had to say that he spoke with Tony Evers. I'll just read you a quote from the governor's statement that he put out. Quote, thanks to Tony Evers for his gracious comments on our call today. I offer the full support of my staff and our cabinet as he begins the transition process. The governor goes on to say, quote, finally, thank you to the voters of the great state of Wisconsin. It has been my honor to serve as your governor for nearly 8 years. So, I mean, a very clear, unambiguous concession there. We didn't get to hear him deliver it from a stage last night. He said that they were still kind of evaluating their options as Milwaukee votes were coming in late in the evening. But there was no doubt about it here. You know, there was some talk that he might ask for a recount, depending on what happened, but totally ruled that out today. Tony Evers, governor-elect of Wisconsin.
Well, and you mentioned the recount after Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate for president in 2016, requested a recount in Wisconsin. There was a new law passed and signed into law by Governor Walker dealing with the issue of recounts. What does that say?
It would have, under the current margins, prevented the governor, had he wanted a recount, it would have prevented him from asking for it. Under the law that he signed, any candidate that was more than a percent behind the leader in a race would be prohibited from asking for a recount. So it didn't come up in this case, but Governor Walker ended up the evening about 1 point, about 1.15% behind Tony Evers, which was enough to put him out of that recount range.
So looking at how different districts and counties voted, was this a case of Walker losing support in areas he carried previously, or maybe more of Evers making inroads in traditionally red areas, or really beefing up support in blue places?
Evers definitely beefed up support in blue places. I mean, if you look at what he did in Dane County and what Tammy Baldwin did in Dane County, too, for that matter, the Democratic machine in Dane County is stronger than it's ever been. There are just more Democratic voters here than ever before. Evers was polling like 75% in Dane County. Tammy Baldwin was like up to 78%. I mean, Barack Obama did not see those numbers, and he was sort of the standard for what a Democratic victory in Wisconsin could look like. And yet here we have Evers and Baldwin just kind of redefining success in Dane County. That stood out. I think Walker's performance in the wow counties in suburban Milwaukee, Washington, Waukesha, Ozaukee, they were down specifically in Waukesha, which is the biggest of those in terms of votes. Walker still did well there, but he didn't do up to his own standards. I mean, we've seen what it looks like when Governor Walker wins a statewide election in 2010, in 2012, in 2014. He's usually up around 72% of the vote in Waukesha County. He was more around 66% last night. That's a big drop off in terms of numbers. And I think those two counties tell you a lot about why things ended up the way they did.
So it was a very close election, as we said, only about a percentage point and a half between Evers and Walker. Do we have a sense of what issues pushed Evers over the top with Wisconsin voters?
The exit polling, the early exit polling that I saw, and, you know, a grain of salt, whenever you're talking about exit polling, it has a wide margin of error. But people were saying that their top issue was health care. And who talked about healthcare more than anyone else in this race? Democrats. Tony Evers talked about it. Tammy Baldwin talked about it. Third party groups talked about it. They talked specifically about protections for pre-existing conditions that are part of the Affordable Care Act, and stressed that Governor Walker, through his lawsuit that would that seeks to overturn the Affordable Care Act, would take those protections away. It was a significant enough issue that Walker really engaged on it and pushed back and said, okay, yes, I want to get rid of Obamacare, but I support this state bill that would have pre-existing conditions protections. That so what we know, I guess, is that that issue was in people's minds as they left in these exit polls. And we know that Evers talked about it a lot.
And our governor-elect Tony Evers and a lieutenant governor-elect Mandela Barnes talking yet about what their top priorities will be come January.
It sounds like today they are talking generally about Tony Evers said that he'd reached out to Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, the Republican leader of the state Senate, and Speaker Robin Voss, the Republican leader of the state Assembly. They will remain in those positions, barring something completely unexpected. You know, their caucuses actually choose who their leaders are. But usually when leaders emerge from an election like this and they still have their majorities, they get to keep their jobs if they want it. So nothing real specific at this point from Evers. He has to pick a transition team. Then he has to start piecing together a cabinet. And, you know, that'll give people a sense of what kind of an administration he's going to have. Whatever he does, he's going to have that legislature who's going to see things differently, probably on a lot of issues. He's going to send them a lot of things that they want nothing to do with. They're going to send him a lot of bills that he's going to veto.
We're talking with WPR Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson right now about last night's election results. And Sean, the governor's race clearly was close. The race for attorney general was even closer. Where are we at with that right now?
So as of right now, that one is not quite as resolved as the governor's race. From what we've heard from Attorney General Brad Schimmel, I mean, he can see that the election didn't quite go his way. Josh Call leads in that race, according to unofficial results, by about 23,000 votes. So he would be within that recount margin. It's less than a percent between them. But 23,000 votes isn't nothing. I mean, Donald Trump won Wisconsin by about 23,000 votes. And remember, Trump's victory was the reason that recount laws were changed. It was thought that was kind of a waste of money to do a recount when President Trump had that large of a margin in Wisconsin. So I think Attorney General Schimmel has said he wants to see the official canvas of the election results, which is essentially each county going through and verifying their numbers and sending them to the state.
And when might that be?
It could be as soon as next week, I believe, although it wouldn't have to be. But I think next week could be when you start to see that.
And let's move on to the U.S. Senate race. Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin won easily over Republican challenger Leah Vukmir. Any surprises there?
Her margin was pretty substantial. I mean, it was not close in that race. Tammy Baldwin had about an 11-point margin over Leah Vukmir. If you were watching the Marquette polls and taking them as gospel throughout this, which we're often cautioned not to, but in this case, Marquette got it right. I mean, their last poll had the race for governor a tie. You know, somebody has to win. Evers won by about a percent. Marquette's last poll had Tammy Baldwin up 11 points, and there she sits with an 11-point victory. Tammy Baldwin did have a more broad-based victory than Tony Evers. I mean, she won more counties in western and southwestern Wisconsin. I guess that's what sticks out as you look at this map. But beyond that, she also had even better performance in Dean County. I mean, 78% of the vote in Dean County to get up to near 80% of the vote in a county where the population is growing is, I think, something that Democrats have to look at and feel all right about. I mean, a lot of elections have not gone their way over the last decade, obviously, but there's a powerhouse of votes there in Dean County that seems to be growing.
A lot of money was spent on behalf of both candidates by outside groups. Who was lining up behind Vukmir and Baldwin?
Yeah, Vukmir and Baldwin, I think in Baldwin's case, she raised a lot of money on her own. I mean, her campaign was a very aggressive fundraiser, kind of took matters into their own hand. A lot of the outside money was spent against Tammy Baldwin before this general election contest even started. I mean, before Republicans even knew who their nominee was going to be, there was outside money being spent against Tammy Baldwin. And you did for a little time see it kind of bringing her favorability rating down a bit. But, you know, you never got the sense that Leah Vukmir emerged from that GOP primary with Kevin Nicholson with much momentum. You know, it she actually went down as the race progressed from that primary. So it just seemed like that one was never in doubt from a distance.
We're getting results and analysis of last night's statewide results from WPR's Capital Bureau Chief, Sean Johnson.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did any of the outcomes surprise you? We had big turnout in Wisconsin. Were you part of that? Were you excited to cast your ballot for whichever candidate? Did you split your ticket? I'm going to ask you this a lot. There are people out there, a decent number of people who voted for a Democrat in one race, Republican in another, vice versa. Love to hear from you if that's you. What are you hoping for from now a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature? Is there an issue you think they could work together on? Maybe roads, healthcare, education. What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org.
We'll pick up the conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. WPR's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson is with us. He's on 24-hour detail to discuss last night's results and what they mean for Wisconsin.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Are you happy with how things turned out last night? Did you vote? Why or why not? What do you think a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature will mean for Wisconsin going forward? Call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's finish up with the congressional races. All the incumbents, Sean, in Wisconsin's congressional delegation won re-election if they were running. The only open seat was in the first congressional district, which is Paul Ryan's. What happened there?
What happened there was that the Republican won. Brian Stile defeated Randy Bryce in that district. And, you know, for all the attention that one got nationally here and here in Wisconsin, that was not a close race. Brian Stile had about 55% of the vote to Randy Bryce's 43% of the vote. I mean, we knew that was a Republican district. It got a lot of attention in part because it was Speaker Ryan's. And once President Trump became President Trump and Speaker Ryan was Speaker Ryan, there was a whole lot of attention and money given to Randy Bryce as he announced he was going to challenge Speaker Ryan. Once Speaker Ryan bowed out of the race, I mean, it changed the characteristics of that race. And Brian Stile, the Republican candidate, got, you know, kind of Republican numbers in that district, which is, if you set aside all the backstory, it's kind of what you'd expect.
Let's go to the phones, and Jeff in Superior is up. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, thank you. I've been listening to your coverage even last night. I thought it was very well balanced. You had Republican analysts as well as Democratic analysts even before the results were known. So thank you for doing that.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, and my reaction is I really appreciated hearing from Bill McCaution in Madison because he's a Republican strategist, but he's pretty down to earth and he knows what it's like to work even in Northwest Wisconsin with the policy needs that are needed in this area. And my opinion is this. I think there is Walker fatigue. And I think even some Republicans who like Trump are glad Walker's gone. A lot of drama and a lot of that. So this is an opportunity for the Republican Party to go in a whole nother direction without antagonizing the teachers or threatening government employees by taking their pension money, stuff like that. So I think really this is a watershed moment for Wisconsin. It's going to be everyone's going to be looking forward. There's going to be an opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to come together and actually work on infrastructure and do some things that are practical for everyday Wisconsinites. And we'll just put the past behind us. That's my opinion.
All right. Thanks so much for those thoughts, Jeff. And let's go now to Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. What do you want to say?
Good. Well, you know what? I had an opportunity to meet a lot of the candidates along the way. I was an unannounced candidate for lieutenant governor, and I'm so glad that I didn't choose to run. I'm very happy with the selection of Mandela. I think with the experience Mandela had in the state legislature and the people that he knows there and the fact that he's a person of color and Tony's disposition, I see an extreme willingness, and it is not my hope or my expectation that we'll be able to demand that we get some nonpartisan cooperation. I think that the Republicans will be eager to achieve that if we don't go after the issues that are most important at this particular point in time and get cooperation from those people. They're going to be easy targets in the next election cycle. So I'm beyond hopeful. I'm expectant. And I know that I personally have enough influence, or want to believe that I do, that I can help move in that direction.
Thanks for that comment, Bob. And Sean, let's talk about that balance that we're going to have, because the Evers-Barnes ticket is Democratic, but the Wisconsin State Senate and Assembly remain Republican. And the balance even changed a bit in the legislature.
In the Senate, we were watching in particular because, you know, there was a chance the Democrats could flip that chamber if they picked up, if they flipped two seats and didn't lose any of their own. What happened is that the seats that they targeted, they fell short. The closest they got was in the 5th State Senate District in Milwaukee and Waukesha County, so suburban Milwaukee, where Dale Coinga won his race by less than 3%, which kind of illustrates that suburban issue that Republican voters have right now in the age of Trump. But what Republicans were able to do, though, they won the first state Senate district. That was the district that had the special election this past summer. Caleb Frostman in that special election defeated Andre Jacques. In the rematch, Andre Jacques defeated Caleb Frostman. So he's going to be Senator Jacques. And so a 19-14 majority in the Senate. I don't know what that means for the Senate. I mean, Andre Jacques is somebody who's shown a willingness to buck party leadership. There's already, I think you could say, 4 Republican state senators who have shown a willingness to do that. Maybe he gets added to that caucus in some votes. And so in a way, you talk about like reaching a bipartisan issue or a bipartisan agreement. Excuse me. What Tony Evers has said about road funding is very similar to what Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has said about road funding. I mean, there's not a lot of daylight between them, really. All options should be on the table. You've kind of heard that from both of them. And so maybe the Assembly could reach an agreement with Governor Evers on road funding. But I'm not so sure about the Senate, because there are enough senators in there to block anything that has a tax increase in it. And, you know, with, I think with the addition of Senator Jacques, I'm not sure that's going to change. I mean, it may be that he gives the, you know, them more veto power depending on the issue.
Let's go back to the phones, and Jerry in Appleton is up. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. I'm Jerry in Appleton, and I think the most significant result of this election is not right now, but going forward into 2020, when the census is done, and then there's redistricting. The fact that Tony Evers won the governor race will have an impact on redistricting, and you can see that result in many of the elections for the Assembly and the Senate around the state, that the districts are very gerrymandered. And so I'm hopeful that we will start to see bringing together these districts that will cause the electorate to be more moderate.
And thanks for that call, Jerry. Sean, is the redistricting issue something that is likely to be affected?
Absolutely, because the next governor will have the power to sign or veto whatever maps the legislature draws up after the 2020 census. So in 2011, Governor Scott Walker signed the maps that were drawn by Republicans. And, you know, maps, district lines are not the only factors in legislative races, but they're pretty important. And if you look back at the last decade, they have helped Republicans hang on to those majorities for the past decade. We just had a 50-50 election, basically, in Wisconsin, where a Democrat won in the race for governor. You know, more like a 55% you know, race for the Democrat in the race for U.S. Senate. And yet the legislature is going to be under Republican control. They gained a seat in the Senate. I mean, I think that illustrates the power of district lines as one factor among many when it comes to these races. So, yes, Tony Evers will have the power to veto any kind of map if Republicans are in control after the 2020 census and they send something to his desk. And if that's the case, then this ends up getting resolved in court, most likely.
I want to turn to how many people voted. Voter turnout across the country was much higher than usual for a midterm election. What about here in Wisconsin?
It was more than a typical midterm, less than a presidential. So we're still not looking at what we normally would get during a presidential race, but certainly higher than when Governor Walker was first elected in 2010.
And very briefly, were there areas that showed especially high turnout?
I keep coming back to Dane, but it's just really, really noteworthy. Dane had very big turnout, and when, 75% to 78% of that turnout is going to the Democratic candidates, that is a huge factor in what was a very close election. I really can't overstate it. It almost sounds like a lazy analysis to say, like, well, Dane County votes for Democrats. We've said that for years. But really, in this election, you're seeing Dane County increase its significance in statewide elections.
And, Sean, in the couple months before the new administration takes office, are we likely to see efforts to solidify priorities of the Walker team as they're on their way out?
They have a chance, Republicans do, to call an extraordinary session. The legislative leaders have said they might do that before the end of the year. And they can kind of decide what they want to talk about in that session. I mean, they said that they would do it to deal with this bill that would give Foxconn-style incentives to Kimberly Clark. But there's nothing saying that legislative leaders couldn't expand that call to other issues, other bills that have passed one house of the legislature. Or, for that matter, there's nothing keeping Governor Walker from calling a special session in his last couple months to deal with something that is unfinished business for him. He hasn't said he's going to do that. I mean, to be clear, the governor's never said he's going to do that, but it's not unheard of. I mean, when Democrats were leaving power in 2010, they called a special session to deal with state employee contracts. These things happen. So, stay tuned for the next couple months. I mean, the governor also has the power to appoint people. He can issue executive orders. There are things that he can do to further cement his legacy. But if you look back, I mean, his legacy is fairly well cemented in Wisconsin. There are laws that he has signed that it will not be easily undone despite a Governor Evers. I mean, Act 10 is law in Wisconsin, voter ID. You could go on and on and on, and all the things that were big issues where Governor Walker has moved the state to the right. And even though we now have a Democratic governor coming in Madison, it's not going to be easy for Tony Evers to just snap his fingers and change everything back.
Well, Sean, thanks for your work last night, this morning, and this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief. He joined us to look at last night's election results.
In addition to tight races here in Wisconsin, there was election drama around the rest of the country, which with the most of the results in, Democrats will regain control of the House of Representatives, while Republicans added to their majority in the U.S. Senate.
President Trump said today that his party outperformed expectations for midterm elections, while Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi claimed the results were evidence that the American people want checks and balances on the Trump administration.
Craig Gilbert is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Craig, welcome back to the show.
Nice to be with you.
Well, we touched on it just briefly there, but there's kind of something for everybody in the elections yesterday. Each side could claim victory, at least in some senses, right?
Yeah, I think that's a reflection of kind of that balkanized quality right now to the political landscape, where different things are happening among different groups of voters and in different parts of the country. And we saw that certainly in Wisconsin, where you had, this sort of massive Democratic turnout in the super blue cities like Milwaukee and Madison. You had kind of a depletion of the traditional Republican vote in the suburbs, and then you had enough Republican strength in the outlying areas and the rural areas to kind of prevent the Democrats from making gains in the rest of the state. So all those things were happening in Wisconsin. They were happening nationally in the House results, where the suburbs killed the Republicans, in the Senate, where in the red states and more rural states, it claimed some Democratic Senate incumbents. So yeah, you're right. A little bit of everything.
And the predictions ended up being kind of true. The Democrats gained enough in the House to take it over. They didn't in the Senate. Republicans actually advanced. That was kind of well within what people were looking at. But it seemed like in the expectation game, you had Democrats thinking, okay, this might be it. This might be, we might go nuts. 50 seats in the House, advances in the Senate. And I was hearing Republican leaders say, we've got a really good shot at keeping control of the House. And it ended up being right there in the middle, what everybody kind of thought it was going to be.
Yeah, and in the middle of probably, what we would have expected stepping back, but it was still a good election for Democrats. I mean, they took over the House. They ended monopoly control of government in Washington by the Republican Party, and where they suffered losses in the Senate, they were playing on a really tilted playing field. I mean, these were very, very red states. The governor's races. Democrats made inroads, but they did have some major disappointments in places like Ohio and Florida. Again, looking at these states, you know, you had kind of like the famous upper Midwestern blue wall that turned for Trump, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, kind of turning back for the Democrats, with most of the big races in those three states turning against the Republican Party. So you're right. When you step back, nothing too much should shock us, but when you kind of peer under the hood, at least particularly in Wisconsin, you do see some really striking numbers.
And looking nationally again, the New York Times had this visualization that I thought was interesting. They looked in each race, regardless of who won, and just said, okay, what was the swing in votes since the last election, these House races? And there, a lot of House seats moved significantly toward the Democratic side, even if that wasn't enough to switch who won.
Yeah, and again, it probably correlates with the makeup of these districts. I mean, obviously, the biggest Democratic gains were in the suburban districts, including the districts that had voted for Hillary Clinton, but even some districts that have voted for Donald Trump. But still, the more kind of suburban, the higher education these districts are, the more likely they were to turn against the Republican Party. I mean, this does seem to be part of an unfolding pattern of, you know, kind of a growing education divide, kind of a growing class divide that is predates the Trump era, but is really pronounced in the Trump era.
Touched for just a moment on what this means for Congress now in the House. Democrats control it. They can do things like control the House Intelligence Committee, say, and run their own investigations. It's a lot easier to do that in the majority there. With the Republican control of the Senate, this means President Trump's judicial nominees still have pretty smooth sailing. If he has to do something like, I don't know, replace an attorney general, which seems to be in the works now in the news today, he still has a friendly landscape in the U.S. Senate.
True. I mean, the ultimate, you know, leverage that each party has over the other is the ability to prevent either side from really doing anything. And certainly, you know, one of the exceptions to that is the Senate confirmation role. But beyond that, which, you know, and again, that's been evident for the past 2 years, what's changed, of course, is there's no longer a Republican House. There's just not a whole lot the president can get done or the Senate can get done beyond confirmations and treaties without the House. At the same time, you know, while the Democrats have an ability to do a lot of oversight, you know, they can't really get anything done. I mean, the Republicans in the House couldn't get anything through the Senate when the same party controlled both chambers. So the Democrats it's really about oversight and opposition for them.
Well, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, maybe soon to be House Speaker again, talked a little bit about this topic. This is last night.
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration.
Craig, I know polling had tried to get at this issue, and it may be kind of a nuanced one for a poll, but this idea of, okay, are people voting in some cases because they want that kind of check on President Trump, even if maybe they kind of like President Trump?
Well, I think there is evidence in the polling for that. I mean, a lot of people did want that. I mean, we know that there are a number of Trump voters out there that are conflicted in the sense that they don't like everything about President Trump, and they may not be ready to disapprove of his performance or try to cast him out of office, but they may want some check on him. They may want him to tone it down a little bit. So, yeah, I think there's some evidence that there's an appetite out there. It's not like, you know, everybody's suddenly voting for divided government, but it is the consequence when you have the kind of divided political climate we have. And it's also, there's just sort of a longstanding historical pattern in the last 20 or 30 years where, you know, the parties are so evenly divided, it's so competitive, and they're so far apart from each other that when one party is kind of handed the keys to the kingdom, the voters generally at the first available opportunity 2 years later take some of that power away because they either fear overreach or they think there's been overreach.
Talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, breaking down national results. We'll also spend some time here in Wisconsin after yesterday's election day. We just touched on the House, the Senate. President Trump took a lot of pride in Senate pickups. Here he is at the White House today.
In the last 80 years, a sitting president's party has only gained a cumulative total of 8 Senate seats, averaging one per decade. So if we picked up 2, 3, or 4, that's a big percentage of that number.
So as you said, Craig, the map, the quirks of the map and where these elections were not in Democrats' favor. They were defending a lot of seats, and they were defending them in places where Donald Trump had won. They were in red states. Still, it's not nothing for Republicans to pick these up.
No, I mean, it was an historically bad map for Democrats. And so, you know, you have to factor that in. But, you know, the Republicans will take their wins where they can get them. It wasn't 100% perfect night for Republicans in the Senate. I mean, they lost a seat in Nevada. Again, these, you know, senators they once had hopes of knocking off, like Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin and maybe Debbie Stabenow in Michigan. I mean, a bunch of senators in the purple states just cruised to reelection. But it was really in the deep red states that you saw some Democratic incumbents ousted, and that's a trouble. The most troubling thing about that for Democrats is that will they ever get those seats back? I mean, in an age when these elections are nationalized, it gets harder and harder for a senator to stay in office if it's a Democratic senator in a red state or a Republican senator in a blue state. So it tilts the playing field against the Republicans long term in the Senate, against the Democrats long term in the Senate.
I want to get into the minds of voters to the extent we can. Craig, we talked to you about a bunch of pieces you wrote. You went to different congressional districts around Wisconsin. You took your numbers game with you, but then you talked to people and got the stories behind why they thought and voted the way they did. With that experience behind you, what kind of things are you thinking about? What kind of questions are coming up in your mind a day after Election Day?
Well, I mean, certainly you had massive Democratic enthusiasm in many places. At the same time, you know, I'm really interested in, with divided government in both Madison and Washington, there is an appetite among a significant segment of the electorate for compromise. And, it's not necessarily in the cards, but it'll be interesting to watch how the two parties approach this, both, again, in Madison and in Washington, a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature in Madison, a Republican president and a Democratic House in Washington, whether they feel any particular public pressure going into the next election cycle to try to show some evidence that they are not intransigent, that they've tried to work with the other side, or whether we're just sort of doomed to both gridlock and kind of, you know, bitter conflict. You do talk to voters and you do run into voters, and it's a significant number who feel like they're kind of in between these warring factions, and they'd kind of like people to sort of behave a little bit and play well with others.
We're talking to Craig Gilbert from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at last night's midterm results on the national level.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What message do you think yesterday's mixed results send? How do you think a split Congress will function? What races around the country were you watching? And what do you think they signal for elections in the years to come? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're continuing our look at the national midterm results with Craig Gilbert. He's Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Was there a race you were watching? What did you think of the outcomes nationally or in Wisconsin? And I want to follow up on that point that Craig just brought up. Is there a mood for compromise? Do you want to see compromise? Do you feel like even if you lean toward a party or the other one, that they don't really represent you, that they're not really doing the job that you want them to do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. To your calls now, Will is with us in Eau Claire. Will, hi.
Hi, hi, folks. Good conversation. Wanted to follow up on Craig's point about compromise. I think that the current mode of promoting campaign undermines effective governing. And I don't think that until the electorate makes it very clear that the compromise that's necessary to govern effectively that's undermined by campaigning is important to them if it's going to happen, you know, because politicians all want the same thing, another term. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Will, thanks a lot for calling on Craig. Calling in, Craig, do you see these structural reasons that make it a hard to compromise, reasons that politicians might ignore constituents who want them to compromise?
Sure. I mean, there have been tremendous disincentives to compromise. I mean, that's why we're in the situation we're in. I mean, people don't necessarily get rewarded by their own parties and by the most avid, you know, partisans in their own parties for trying to work with the other side. You know, there's a reason this is the politics we have. So it's far from probable that we're going to kind of break out of these patterns. But I think it also kind of ensures a just kind of chronic frustration on the part of a large segment of the electorate who are not, you know, members of the partisan warring tribes, and who would genuinely kind of like to see a healthier political culture, and also they'd like to see some work across party lines in Washington.
That makes me think of the issue of gerrymandering. If you have a safe seat, why not elect the most extreme, the most conservative or liberal candidate you can in that district? Do you see that playing a role here in Wisconsin, elsewhere in the country?
Well, there's a lot of debate among political scientists about whether that's really a prime mover behind the problems we're talking about. I think it's certainly, there are certainly a lot of other really important causes. I think gerrymandering has its own issues and problems when it just comes to kind of democratic values and accountability, because it sort of destroys competitiveness and with it the kind of meaningful elections that you know, where outcomes are in suspense, and it also, you know, it just locks in a power for parties in the majority, even when they're unpopular, and that's just sort of kind of troubling from a civics point of view. So I think gerrymandering brings with it its own issues. I think even without gerrymandered districts, I think we'd have a problem with kind of partisan tribalism.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tom is on the line in Madison. Tom, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just got back from the 1,999th Solidarity thing at the Capitol, and we are very, very happy about the new bunch of candidates and politicians that have come into the arena. There are people there, I think, like Tony Evers, who are willing to cross over those lines and talk to people about actually getting things done. And I think hopefully we're signaling an end to the partisanship and the gerrymandering that drove actual conservatives like Dale Schultz to quit the Republican Party, and because he was being primaried by the extreme right. Hopefully this is a new day of cooperation.
And Tom, I want to ask, since we've got you on the line, you're with the Solidarity Singers. There's been speculation that when Governor Walker leaves office, that the sing-alongs might end. What do you think? Oh, we lost him. Okay, I guess it'll remain a mystery until Inauguration Day. But Craig, to his point, he's happy to see progressives. He sees maybe the temperature going down to where maybe older-style conservative Republicans and across-the-aisle Democrats can work together.
Well, I think we'll all hold our breath. I mean, it's just, you know, this hasn't been the pattern in kind of modern politics, but it wasn't that long ago where the pattern was different, where you had, you know, for example, Tommy Thompson working as a Republican governor with a Democratic legislature and Bill Clinton as a Democratic president working with a Republican Congress. So it wasn't that long ago that it was done, but it does seem like there's a lot of obstacles today.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Craig Gilbert with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looking at election results, what we can glean from them in Wisconsin and around the country. Back to your calls. Adam is with us in central Wisconsin. Adam, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your story, Adam?
I'm curious about the medical marijuana and recreational, too. I would qualify for medical marijuana, and
like, you guys don't talk that much about it, and I was just curious what Eber's real stand is on it. I specifically voted for the first time because Walker was so dead set against it.
All right, Adam, thanks for the call. So medical marijuana is a motivating issue for Adam, maybe others. There are also referenda in a couple counties around the state. Craig, is this the kind of thing that can drive people to vote, as, in this case, for the first time?
I think some people, but I just don't know how big the numbers are, and I haven't really followed this issue as closely as some other people at my paper, so I'm probably not the best person to ask.
All right, Adam, thanks for the call. Robert joins us now in Madison. Robert, hi. Are you there, Robert? Okay, we don't have Robert. We'll try Ann in Stevens Point. Ann, hello.
Hi there. I'm a progressive. I'm delighted that Tony Evers won. I'm delighted that the House was returned to the Democrats. But I and many of us who canvassed and everything want the parties to work together. We want the Republicans in our state legislature to work with this new governor. And I absolutely want the House to work with President Trump, even though I very much dislike Trump. We must work together, and that's what we out here want. We are not as divided as people would say. We want guys to work together.
And thanks a lot for the call. We're getting a lot of calls along these lines, Craig, and not just in this segment. This appetite seems to be there. But how do you, how do you mobilize that? How do you make that a message that will motivate politicians to listen and compromise?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. Like I said, over the past year when I've been going around the state talking to people, this is like a major theme of the conversations I've had with voters. I mean, so many voters feel like neither party kind of really perfectly or even, you know, all that well represents their constellation of views, and they are deeply frustrated with the party system, and they would like to see people working together. And so that's out there. And it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be a really interesting test in both Madison and Washington of whether it will be business as usual or not.
Time for one more quick call. Bob is with us in Madison. Bob, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. Briefly, what did you want to tell us?
I'll be real quick. I think the governor-elect could extend some compromise as far as picking his cabinet and try to pick some moderates for his cabinet that can work with the Assembly and the Senate. And then also with the budget coming up, that is going to be really important that the two sides work together, because the budget's always a hard thing to get through. But I think,
Bob, I'm going to jump in. We just have a minute or so left. Craig, the budget might be a really big test of how well these guys can play together.
Yeah, I mean, it's a conservative legislature, and and you're going to have a Democratic governor, so there's clearly going to be some pretty big gaps there in terms of their ability to kind of work across the aisle. But there were things that the legislature disagreed with Scott Walker, a Republican governor, and so maybe on things like roads, who knows? Maybe there is some potential on issues that aren't so highly kind of charged with, you know, hot button politics that separates the parties. I mean, we just, you know, I don't honestly know what to tell you about what's going to happen, but certainly, I mean, the potential is there for bitter conflict, and maybe the potential is there for something better.
Craig, thanks for joining us after a late night. That was Craig Gilbert, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, with us to dig into the results of yesterday's midterm elections from around the country. We'll have more conversations about those elections coming up, and join us tomorrow at 4:30. We're going to be looking for your calls, more of your calls, your reactions, your hopes, maybe your fears for the future after the outcome of yesterday's elections. We changed our clocks just a few days before Election Day, and voters in one state want to get rid of the twice-a-year clock-changing ritual.
It wasn't the most high-profile issue on a ballot yesterday, but Proposition 7 in California asked voters if they wanted to get rid of the spring-forward, fall-back plan.
Looks like they voted against changing the clock twice a year and to make daylight savings time the permanent time.
It's not a done deal yet, and I didn't know this was needed, but they need approval from Congress to opt out of the national time standards.
And other states are in different stages of considering changes to the clock. What do you think?
So I have to say it catches me off guard every year when we fall back. Yesterday, if anyone drove by my house, they would have seen me in the dark, not that late, but in the dark, planting bulbs that I hadn't gotten into the ground yet, wearing a headlamp. Because it was so dark at like 6 o'clock.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean that's the fallback really kind of sets me back. No pun intended, or maybe intended.
They also have weekends where you cannot plant.
Yeah,
those bulbs.
No, but the ground's gonna freeze.
So
yeah.
You're racing against the weather clock
exactly.
As well as the day-to-day.
But yeah,
clock.
It was quite the little spectacle.
I did pretty well with fall back this year. I didn't stay up too crazy late. I feel like I actually embraced the extra time to sleep, so it worked out for me this time.
There you go. Maybe you saved it up for, you know, how late you were up for election night.
This is maybe. This is Central. What are we? Standard time right now. Central time on the Ideas Network.